Wimbledon is underway. Spain's Rafael Nadal already out in a shocker yesterday. Our next guest is one of the few in the world who knows the feeling. He's lost a few. But Jimmy Connors and Rafael Nadal have each won Wimbledon twice. Connors was world champion, winner of 8 Grand Slams. In the 1970s, he helped bring tennis from the country club to the streets where he learned it, wielding the two-handed backhand his sometimes controversial manager mom taught him, washing his one pair of white shorts in a hotel sink. Here are the final moments as he beats Bjorn Borg to win the 1976 U.S. Open.
That's it!
The Connors!
But this was also Jimmy Connors.
Very clear, my butt! My butt's very clear! You can't see a ball right in front of you, let alone over there!
Okay, look, let's cut to the chase. Jimmy Connors has a new memoir out. It's called The Outsider. Frankly, we're glad he's in the studios of NPR West in case he wants to throw a tantrum or a racket at us.
Jimmy, that would never happen, Robin. I'm telling you, it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, you do write about mellowing a bit, but to talk about this person that you were on the court, you make no bones. You did grab your crotch. You did.
Wait a moment. You know, I like the introduction, to be honest with you, because, you know, I mean, that was me. There's no denying it. You know, that was my love for the sport, and nobody was out there, you know, helping me do anything, arguing for me or whatever. I had to do it on my own, and I was pretty good at it.
Well, it's funny. The Daily Beast in their review wrote, they were hoping that when they picked up this memoir that they would find out that you had been misunderstood. That, for instance, when John McEnroe wrote that he walked up to introduce himself to you when he was young, and you didn't speak to him, that was not true. But you write, no, it was true.
Yeah, no, it was. I had what he wanted. I had won Wimbledon. I'd won the U.S. Open. I was the best in the world at one time. And, you know, he was coming up trying to take that. You know, the name of the book is The Outsider. And it, you know, goes back, you know, way back into my childhood and the way I felt. Would that have been a better thing to say, hey, what's up? I don't know. Would it have been?
Because you threw him off his game.
Well,
by not doing that.
That was unintentional.
Well, I want to pick up because you do take us back to your working class upbringing, East St. Louis. Your mom, Gloria, your grandmom, you called her two mom, build a court in your backyard so you can play. One day you're playing on a public court and you see your mom get punched in the face. I mean, this was a driving force for you.
You know, what I learned from that, it was that no matter what my mom went through, and she went through a lot that day, hundreds and hundreds of stitches and so forth like that, that the next day my brother and I wanted to play tennis. And she got up off that couch in a minute and went out on the tennis court with us and, you know, anything for her boys.
She was in your corner, no doubt. But take us back to the comment you made that you felt there was nobody on your side. As we know, you came into this world of tennis right at the time where it was making this transition from something that was for more rarefied air to something that a kid could play on the streets, and you were that kid. Was there a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, like, wow, everybody else had training camps in Florida or California, and here I come? Was there a little bit of that, too?
Yeah, you know, you can call it a chip if you want, but, you know, coming up and with my mom and my grandmother teaching me, and that was a rarity also, that, you know, normally it was Joe Montana's dad gave him a football and Wayne Gretzky's dad gave him a hockey stick, and you know, it was always okay for the dad to do it, but, you know, to have my mom give me a tennis racket and to teach me her game, which was a woman's game, to go out and to play against men was, you know, something out of the ordinary. So it was just the feeling that we had, that we were kind of invading, you know, another side of the river. We were from Illinois and went to Missouri to play, and, you know, it's us against them.
You say in the book, I'm going to be transparent, and you are. You talk about cheating on your current wife. The marriage very much survived, but long before that, you dated Chrissy Evert, and in the book, you reveal that she had an abortion. Now, she released that statement saying how disappointed she was that this private matter became public. Why did you write about that?
Well, I wrote about things that were emotional to me and you know, it happened in my life. You know, I didn't ask anybody, you know, what to put in the book and what to write. And you know, so for, you know, for me to you know, not be out front or up front about it was, you know, wouldn't seem to be me.
But with all of this, giving the finger, you know, going around the other side of the net, how do you feel now that the word jerk has made its way into some of the reviews of the book.
I guess they're still talking. Did I cross the line a few times? You know, I'm going to say probably did, but, you know, not my line.
Well, in fact, you say it, I'm going to paraphrase now, that people who are being critics are being disingenuous because you were giving the crowd what they wanted. You were giving the vendors what they wanted. You were giving the game what the game seemed to want.
I liked the fans becoming emotionally involved. You know, whether you liked me or you didn't, you were coming and you were a part of it.
What do you think of the game today? We just had that incredible Djokovic-Nadal semifinal in the French Open. Extraordinary tennis, huge serves, heavy spin, players miles behind the baseline. You say what?
I say certainly they play great tennis. The equipment and the rackets and the string and everything that they've changed along the way has certainly given the players today every opportunity to be as good or even better than maybe they should be. But back in the day, we had guys like McEnroe and Nastasi and Panada and a lot of guys who had imagination and could play shots that, you know, were seemingly impossible, as they do today. The only difference being that back in the day, you could come and watch and be a part of it and then walk out of that stadium and go hit shots like they did. Today, it would seem to be pretty impossible to go hit 150-mile-an-hour serve.
Do you wish you were playing it?
Well, as a competitor, I'd like to be playing, you know, at all times. I had my day with the right group of guys and guys that were fun and had imagination and had charisma and excitement about the tennis world and about their personal lives.
Who was your favorite competitor?
Well, I said if I had two guys to play for my life outside of myself, I would take Pancho Gonzalez, number one. If Pancho couldn't play, then I would pick John McEnroe because I know that they would go out and give me absolutely everything that they had through the end.
We talked about a lot of the acknowledgments that you make of your behavior on the court, but you also talk in the book about obsessive-compulsive disorder, dyslexia, gambling, made and lost a lot of money, bet on yourself. Any regrets?
No. I'm 60. I've got the scars inside and out to prove it, and that's why I waited until this time to write the book. I had something to say, and I've lived the life, not all of it good, but it was a life lived.
That is tennis legend Jimmy Connors, his new memoir, The Outsider. Jimmy, is there an interaction, a part of a match, a win that you still dream about?
Well, I think the walking off the center court at the U.S. Open after I lost in the semifinal to Jim Courier when I was 39 in 1991 was probably the one thing that I would like to remember. The sound of that crowd and what they were able to give me, that was pretty special.
Jimmy, thanks so much.
Enjoyed it. Thank you, Robin.
Well, here in the Temple of Tennis in America, you've just seen the high priest of the game thanking his flock.
The words after Jimmy Connors' loss in 1991 to Jim Courier, as he said, a loss, but also a victory because he went so far and he was so cheered. And with that in mind, we want to note another match, last night's final and sixth game of hockey Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, the Chicago Blackhawks beat the Boston Bruins, winning the cup for the second time in 4 years in an incredible final minute of play. The Hawks scored two goals 17 seconds apart.
Yes, they did. And the Bruins, they got a lot of people through the last couple of months playing for a city that needed something to cheer about. So a nod to them as well.
Indeed, and I think, Robin, that you owe a listener in Chicago a lobster.
I do.
I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. Please join us again, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.